This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Hey, everybody. It is The After Party Live. Thank you for being here. Sorry for getting a bit of a late start, trying to figure everything out and the computer glitches and whatever else. But we're here. We're ready to roll. Good Mark Thompson Show. David K. Johnston, awesome today. Tomorrow on the Mark Thompson Show, of course, John Rothman will be here, a special guest as well. So still trying to work that out, but we're going to have a great Mark Thompson Show. And just a programming note, the Nikki Maduro Show is at 10 a.m. and we're going to be live on this Friday with a special Mother's Day version of that show. So be prepared for that. Do want to thank Wes, who jumped in before the show even started and threw down a $5 donation contribution to the show. Hugely appreciated. I would call it a super chat or super sticker, but it wasn't on YouTube because I'm still demonetized. So we're still figuring all that out. So thank you for the PayPal contribution. Find the PayPal information in the show description, also in the About tab on the show. So thank you so much for contributing. Really means a lot. Okay, let's jump right into it. It is Travel Tuesday. So we're going to take a dream vacation. I'll tell you, this is a place I will likely never, ever go in my lifetime. So it's a bit of a daydream to kind of get to go there with you today, virtually. So we'll make that happen. Can I tell you? I'll tell you where it is. Can I tell you? Like I don't have the choice. We're going to Croatia. I know. It's not a place you thought of or not on your bucket list, but I'm telling you, the pictures are amazing. And I've known people who've traveled there and have absolutely loved it. So we'll take a look at that. But first, I did want to start with the Vegas alien. I know this picture is kind of hard and weird to see. It's a still. You can see kind of on the left, there's a shadowy figure, right? The Vegas alien video is real. That's according to an expert. The expert says, it's a crime scene expert, says there are two beings in this video. Motion tracking software that they used shows a moving body. And they think that the video taken in a backyard of someone who said there were two beings in the backyard is real. A veteran crime scene recreation expert analyzed this video that shows allegedly two creatures in a backyard and says the video hasn't been altered. And he believes the images that you see of not one but two beings there are real. Once you see it, he says, you can't deny it. Scott Roeder, Evidence Room, Animation and Exhibits is what his business is called. He said, there's no editing. This is an original video. We tried to debunk it to see if there was something that maybe was added to the video. And he said all the results came back as authentic. This video was taken about a year ago, April 30th of 2023, when a family called 911 to say there's something not human in our backyard. So police investigated because officers had spotted mysterious flashing lights in the sky that same night. So, showing that the video hasn't been altered doesn't confirm what is in the video. They said they took a lot of views before they spotted something they initially missed. Two beings in the video at the same time. And they used this motion tracking software to pinpoint the source. We took the vector motion points in space and attached it to a figure in the background to show the movement of the shadow reflects the movement of a body that's attached to the head. They don't believe it's a floating head. They believe it's attached to a body. And the motion of that head from right to left, consistent with the motion they see between the slats of the fence. So, it's there, he said. It's absolutely there. The family appears to be startled by what they see on the video. There are critics, though, that say, we don't know. It might be a shadow cast by a flashlight that the family held. They're convinced that this is explainable. But the crime scene guy says that's not how shadows work. So shadows just don't float above the fence. Doesn't make any sense. So they think it's real. I don't know. Kind of creepy. You know when you smell food cooking? Something smells good coming from the kitchen. Some days here, the whole house smells like bread or pasta, or, you know, it's especially potent when there's tomato sauce cooking, spaghetti sauce, right? Well, I guess that's not so good. When you smell food cooking, it could be, and likely is, air pollution, what they say. The government study was done suggesting that the delicious smell of food cooking at restaurants, food trucks, street vendors, whatever it is, may be negatively impacting air quality. The study done by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they released their findings from a multi-year study of what they called underappreciated sources of urban air pollution. They looked at three cities. They looked at Boulder, Colorado, Las Vegas, and Los Angeles. And they measured human-caused volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, related to cooking. The thinking is, if you can smell it, there's a good chance it's impacting air quality. So they've measured all kinds of VOCs from different sources, from smoke from wildfires, vehicle exhaust, agriculture, all kinds of things. And they said they kept seeing this class of compound in urban environments they called long-chain aldehydes. And they couldn't really explain it from the other sources. The researchers found Las Vegas, which has one of the highest densities of restaurants in the United States, has persistent air quality issues, especially along the Strip. They say on average, 21% of the total mass of VOCs present in Vegas's outdoor air are from cooking activities, generally ranging from 10 to 30%. They found elevated levels in Los Angeles and downwind in Pasadena, too. Overall, the research says air pollution from cooking is underestimated, and it could account for nearly a quarter of VOCs in urban areas. The problem even more acute indoors and inside homes, which means for air quality management, having the data is the first step. They say it's really important to have a whole picture of the emissions and what the makeup of those emissions are to help then form decisions on how best to figure it out. Yeah, if you can smell it, it's impacting your air. It's too bad that I like the smell of it. Oh, no. All right. Well, let's get to animals. So this would not be a big deal in Petaluma. This, you wouldn't even bat an eyelash at this. I mean, chickens walking down the road, no problem. As a matter of fact, there's some that just kind of scurry along the side of the road as I drive along. It's, you know, it's kind of par for the course over here. That's not the way it is in Brooklyn. Nope. Some chickens got loose. Dozens of them escaped. And they were running down the road in Brooklyn. This door of a cargo truck came open during transit. The rear doors started spilling caged chickens into the roadway. Happened on Old Fulton Street near Front Street. You know where that is. The chickens continued to fall from the truck for about two blocks, and some of the cages broke open, and the birds ran for it. They got loose. The chickens, apparently the police had to come out, chase down the chickens, gather up the cages. The chickens were removed from the roadway and taken to a safe area. I hope one or two of them got free. How about this story? The old gator in the drive-thru. It happened in, you guessed it, Florida. I have some video for you on this one. Check it out. The gator in the drive-thru. Why can't this happen here? I don't know.
Yeah, welcome to Florida, where you go to work, casually see alligators just chilling at your job. Welcome to Florida, man. Man, welcome to Florida, where you go to work, casually see alligators just chilling at your job.
Yeah.
Welcome to Florida, man.
So the alligator rolls through the, crawls through, slithers through the bank drive-thru. Yeah. I guess lining up, getting some cash. No. The Florida Credit Union called Addition Financial in Lake Mary, sharing that video to social media showing the gator right in front of the teller window out of the credit union. The guy you hear say, it's just a normal day in Florida. Can we even blame this guy waiting for our five-star service? The bank, the Addition Financial, said in a statement, the gator was turned away from the financial institution because it didn't have an account. Nah, they had to come, somebody had to come take it and take it to safety. But that's, you know, I mean, you turn the corner for the drive-thru where there's a gator in the road. Come on. There's another story I have with video as well. This one is from Southern California. And we've seen this before where bears maybe take a dip in the backyard swimming pool. I thought this one was particularly adorable, though, because she has some babies with
her. Wandering through the backyard of a home in Monrovia, the mama bear and her two cubs were caught on camera while taking a stroll in the backyard pool area yesterday. Video showed mom cooling off in the pool while the babies looked on.
Oh my God.
The trio then climbed a tree before casually walking down the driveway and back into a wooded area. Mm. Wildlife experts say, spring, of course, is this is the time of year when California's bears emerge from their winter dens in search of food and, you know, cooling off at the pool. Mm. Because they're attracted to anything edible or smelly, their search often leads them into residential neighborhoods. Mm. So be aware if you live in those foothills. You got to make sure your area isn't smelly.
I could watch.
How cute is that? Those little baby bears. This is the thing, though. You would have to be really careful, right? I mean, the minute they come in, you're in the house. Because a mama bear with baby bears is kind of scary. I don't know. Cute, though. This is an interesting story. Fascinating. Sperm whales may have their own alphabet. Their own alphabet. I'm fascinated by it. This team from MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, they've decoded this phonetic alphabet, revealing sophisticated structures within sperm whale communication that could be similar to human phonetics and other animal linguistic systems. The study out of Popular Science, or the articles in Popular Science. The study is out of the journal Nature Communications. MIT computer science grad Pratyusha Sharma telling PopSci, sperm whale calls are, in principle, capable of expressing a wider space of meanings than we previously thought. Some of the largest brain species on Earth, sperm whales have very complicated social behaviors. They travel in pods. They have various cultural groups that dive and hunt together. They take turns looking after their younger whales. And they do it all in almost complete darkness. So they need to have really good communication to coordinate between each other. So they use this system of codas. Those are short bursts of clicks to communicate. You may have heard tape recording of that in the past. This team at MIT collected 9,000 codas from sperm whale families in the Eastern Caribbean, and they used acoustic biologging tags called D-tags deployed on whales. The D-tags captured details of the whale's vocal patterns, and the team found these short groups of clicks vary in structure depending on the conversational context. So they took that data, and of course, they used a mix of algorithms for pattern recognition and classification and on body recording equipment. And it revealed the communications weren't random or simple, but more structured and really complex. They essentially, they think, have their own phonetic alphabet. Various auditory elements the team called rhythm, tempo, rubato, and ornamentation work together to form this distinguishable coda array. So depending on the context of the conversation, the whales can systematically modulate certain aspects of their codas. Some smoothly vary the duration of calls or rubato, or add in some extra ornamental clicks. The team found the building blocks of these codas could be combined in various ways, and that the whales then build many distinct vocalizations from the combinations. They called it combinatorial coding, combining all the codas. And looking at the wider communicative context allowed the researchers to discover that there is a real variation in the structure of what the exchanges between these whales are. So the team developed new visualization and data analysis techniques based on AI, and they found that these whales are talking to each other in long exchanges. Now they're interested in finding out if the signals vary depending on the ecological context they're given in, like how much the signals follow rules, like human grammar, that other whales would recognize. So interesting. I don't know. This paper, according to other researchers, offers really interesting details of call combinations and rules that underlie the system in the sperm whales. So it's kind of like alien communication on Earth, they say. I love it. Well, from sperm whales to avocados, kind of a little fuzzy, but you can see that's a lot of avocados in the middle of that store. So many avocados, as a matter of fact, that it's a world record. Oh yeah, avocados galore. The headline on the article reads, "Holy guacamole. This display of avocados in Texas is breaking a world record." They had more than 311,000 avocados in a single display at El Rio Grande Latin Market in Dallas. This is how they celebrated Cinco de Mayo. 86,764 pounds of avocado in the world's largest fruit display. It was examined by a Guinness Book of World Records adjudicator, and it was indeed confirmed to be the largest display in the world. So it was set up on Friday. They had it in place over the Cinco de Mayo weekend last weekend. People were coming and having their pictures taken in front of it. What do you do with all those avocados, though? And avocados are expensive. I would think you would start need to start selling those puppies off. I don't know. It's going to take you a while to sell 311,000 avocados. You better get on it. Congratulations on the world record. I had a comment from Rev in the After Hours Trading who said, "You know what? I went to the store, bought a bunch of lottery tickets, won nothing. I hate the lotto of the day." But I have another one for you, Rev. It's a lotto of the day. In this one, the devil was present. The North Carolina Education Lottery said there were 5,662 top prize winning tickets on Monday when a pick three drawing resulted in the winning numbers 666. It's true. It happened. $2.1 million in prizes were owed because apparently so many people picked triple sixes. I guess so. Combinations of three of the same numbers, known as trips, are some of the most popular sets of numbers played, according to the lottery. Whatever three numbers you pick, the odds of matching exactly all three in a pick three are the same. It's 1 in 1,000 that would happen. So, might not have been huge money, but is interesting enough. I've never picked three of the same number before. If you've been to Disneyland, you may have seen this palm tree, and apparently it's a pretty special palm tree. I did not know this, but saw this article in SF Gate and thought it was interesting enough to share with you. This is a palm tree called the Dominguez Palm, and it's a piece of history that's older than the park. when they were buying Disneyland, the property, they're buying the land for Disneyland, one of the families that sold their property was the Dominguez family. One of the family members was 19 years old. His name is Ron Dominguez. They said they were willing to sell their 10 acres, which had been in their family for three generations. But Ron, who was 19 at the time, had a specific request. He said, Disney had to preserve one very important tree on their land. It's a Canary Island date palm. It was planted in 1896 as a wedding gift to his grandparents. And he didn't want that palm tree taken down. And so Walt Disney said, okay, we'll leave the palm tree in place. You bet. No problem. And here it stands still. The palm tree was planted in 1896. They factored the palm tree into the construction plans for Adventureland. The family says, or Ron says, the house was located right where the entrance to Pirates of the Caribbean and Cafe Orleans are today. The day we moved out, says Ron, in August of 1954, we were walking in ditches and holes. Things were popping up around us because construction had to move ahead. They built Disneyland in a year. And what's interesting about Ron Dominguez is he got a job at Disneyland. He started there as a ticket taker just days after it opened. And people called him a native Disneylander because it was his land. He'd lived there before Disneyland even opened. But he didn't stop at being a ticket taker. He had a personal connection to the place because it was the land his family had had for generations. And within a year, he was a supervisor on Main Street. And by 1970, he was the director of operations at Disneyland. In 1974, he became vice president of Disneyland and chairman of the park operating committee. And when he retired in 1994, he was the executive vice president of Walt Disney Attractions on the West Coast. All because his family sold his land to Disneyland and he worked his way up. Pretty cool. He says he passed away a couple of years ago. In, I think, 2001. But they still talk about his contributions and who he was. So they say the Disney Parks chair on his passing in 2021 said his contributions to Disneyland are nearly incalculable. And there's that palm tree sitting there. They moved the house, the Dominguez house, behind Main Street, and it served as office space, including Walt Disney's office in the park. There was another house that had been moved behind where the Jungle Cruise ride is that was from a different family that sold land, and that became the house that the caretakers for the horses on the property lived in. So, interesting. You walk through Disneyland and see this palm tree, you'll know. It's older than Disneyland, and it's there for a reason. Did you see any of the pictures from the Met Gala yesterday? The dresses, some of them were very sheer. You could see right through. Well, in one case, pictures have been shown that aren't real. And they're of Katy Perry. Let's see if I can show this to you. And Katy Perry's mom fell for this. She wasn't there. She had to work, but someone created AI pictures of her. And I mean, beautiful dress, right? I think the theme was the Garden of Time. And so she looks incredible, but that's not her. It's an AI picture of Katy Perry. And her mom calls her and says, oh, that's beautiful. Look at your dress. You look amazing. And she's like, yeah, I wasn't there. I didn't go. It's fake, 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 fake. She says, she went on Instagram saying, you guys, this is not me. I had to work. I didn't go. Her mom said, I didn't know you went to the Met. What a gorgeous gown. You look like you're in the Rose Parade on your own float. Her mom writes alongside one of the images. She's like, mom, the AI got you. Beware. millions of people are looking at this picture and it's a faker. I mean, I like the dress though. I like what AI did there. Pretty nice. The caption on the picture reads, Katy Perry, that's it. Hashtag Met Gala. The next photo shows her wearing a grass and flower shirt with a bronze chest plate corset. 4.5 million views on that one. It's not her. Both of the pictures do have a disclaimer from X alerting them that they've been digitally created by AI. But we don't know who created these pictures. So just another one of these reminders that it might look like a celebrity, but it's not always what it seems. So not Katy Perry. No. And thank goodness they made her look good because, I mean, AI could make you look any which way. Are you guys ready for this? It's Travel Tuesday. Hold on, I have the Travel Tuesday. I have to use it because I made it, right? It's Travel Tuesday. Woohoo! There it is. You guys ready to travel? Before we get into it, I have a picture to show you of this new yacht. It's a hydrogen yacht. And I guess it's very special because it's not as polluting as your traditional yacht that churns out pollution and spews out grossness into the world. There it is. It's the hydrogen yacht. Yeah. Welcome aboard. Woohoo. It's the world's first hydrogen fuel cell super yacht. Can you imagine having that yacht? God, that's huge. So these super yachts, they're notorious for spewing out all the grossness. They can emit as much as 7,020 tons of CO2 a year. But now, your super yacht can be green. Project 821, billed as the world's first hydrogen fuel cell super yacht, made by a Danish shipyard cooperative, Feedship. It's been 5 years in the making. This is a 260-foot-long, zero-diesel boat. It reportedly sails shorter distances than standard super yachts on the market, but it still operates its load and amenities with completely emissionless green hydrogen power. The hydrogen cells generate power by turning extremely lightweight liquid hydrogen into electricity stored in lithium-ion batteries. So unlike fossil fuel engines, noxious smoke, and other pollutants, hydrogen cells only emit harmless water vapor. The technology was cost prohibitive for a while and pretty challenging logistically, but there have been recent advancements that have allowed designers to start incorporating hydrogen fuel cell into cars and planes and boats. They still have issues though, because they have to keep the liquid hydrogen in massive double-walled cryogenic storage tanks with a specific temperature within a dedicated section of the vessel in this case. Liquid hydrogen requires 8 to 10 times more storage space for the same amount of energy created by diesel fuel. So that, along with 16 fuel cells, a switchboard connection for the electrical grid, and water vapor emission vent stacks, meant they had to add an extra 13 feet to the ship's specifications. So, I think it's worth the 13 feet. I don't know. There's 5 decks above the waterline, 2 below, 14 balconies, 7 fold-out platforms with a pool, a jacuzzi, a steam room aboard the super yacht, 2 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms. Only 2 bedrooms? Come on. How are you going to have your party with everyone with their own stateroom? 2 beds, 2 baths, a gym, a pantry, fireplace-equipped offices, a living room, a library, and a full walk-around deck. So, they have to keep it near the harbor for the time being. They can't generate and store enough power for a lengthy crossing, but they can take it out for a week at a time at anchor, 10 knots while leaving harbors or cruising in protected marine zones. So they're working on it. Yep, it's the world's first hydrogen fuel cell super yacht. I mean, if you're going to go super yacht, you know, you might as well go hydrogen fuel cell super yacht, right? No? No, maybe not. All right. How about we go to Croatia on this Travel Tuesday? I like it. I think we should go. Here it is. I have to share my screen with you. I have to hold on for a second. I have to take one video and get one up. All right. This is Croatia. How beautiful is that? Pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look at that. There's so much to see here. It's more beautiful than I ever imagined. It's a country that you can, there's the mainland, there's islands, there's coast, beautiful coastline, Kornati National Park, natural spaces, more than 89 islands here, and great cities like this one, Zadar. It's the historic center of Croatia's oldest city. Founded by ancient Liburnian tribes colonized by the Romans in the first century BCE. You kind of go here to Zadar and you get an inkling as to what makes this history so rich. This centuries of history in this area. They call this Trg Opatis Sike, centered on the remains of the ancient Roman Forum. The stones used to build the 9th century St. Donat's Church, you can see here. Next to the church is the Romanesque Cathedral of St. Anastasia. There's an 11th century bell tower beside St. Mary's Church. A Renaissance Benedictine monastery with bits of Roman and medieval architecture in there. They have the St. Mary's and Baptistery of St. Anastasia, that was destroyed during the Allied bombing in 1943 and had to be rebuilt. Incredible. And if you go along the waterfront here, check this out. How beautiful is that? Let's see if I can line up the picture. I mean, incredible, beautiful views. So this is the waterfront. They have an art installation. It's gleaming marble steps by the water's edge. There's a sea organ, so you can listen to the haunting sounds of pipes powered by waves. And right beside the sea organ, embedded into the waterfront, is this piece called Greeting to the Sun, and it's blue glass panels that glow at night. Wow, that's really cool. So perhaps maybe once you're done there, checking out the sea organ and the glowing glass, you follow the coast and you head to the beach. There's the beautiful islands, amazing things to see, cute little towns. This one is called Dugi Otok, or Long Island. It's about 2 hours away from that town of Zadar if you take one of their ferries called a fast ferry. It's some of Croatia's most laid back, they say, areas. Again, reachable by ferry. The two of them are closest and easiest to reach, about 25 minutes away by boat. The suburbs of Zadar. They have olive groves, pebbly coves, hiking and biking trails. Some of them are, their cars are not allowed. So even bikes are banned in some places during the summer months. You have to walk around. That's just the way it is. How about Kornati National Park? This is so pretty. Look at that. I mean, wow. I think we should go. Should we go for real? Nah. This is Kornati National Park. 89 barren but beautiful islands just south of that little town we showed you. I showed you Dugi Otok. This is the place to go off grid. Beautiful. There's no water mains. There's no electricity anywhere on these islands. Again, 89 islands, just rainwater, gas, and solar energy. There's not even a permanent population. There's some islands have sheep living on them. That's about it. But once the season kicks in, some of these islands, including Cornati, Prisquera, and Lavernica, come to life. There are restaurants and rental cottages that open up for the boating crowd. There's a marina on Prisquera. So there's not much to do except swim, boat, eat, and drink, maybe a little hiking on some of these islands. And if you don't have a boat, they have boat tours and rentals. Look at that water. Incredible. Yesterday, my son was asking me what my favorite color is. And I said it's that blue that surrounds an island right before the dark water. That kind of turquoise, beautiful blue. Just takes your breath away. Oh, pretty. How about now we go to Sebenik? Because we've had enough of the ocean and the islands. So here it is, Sebenik. Pretty nice. Sebenik is one of Croatia's greatest cities that a lot of tourists tend to overlook. But according to CNN Travel, it is a must-see. It was founded in the 11th century CE by Croatians, not the Romans or the Greeks, like other cities there. It's home to the magnificent UNESCO-listed Cathedral of St. Yakov, which is a Gothic Renaissance marvel with a frieze of 71 sculpted portraits around the outside. The Venetians ruled in this city from 1412 to 1791, and they left marble lanes behind in the historic center. Beautiful, so much to see. Old buildings and churches and history. Really cool. One of the things they say not to miss is a fortress, a medieval Mediterranean garden of St. Lawrence's Monastery, where you can breathe in lavender, rosemary, and wild herbs as you relax on the garden's benches. Okay. One of the things that you can do after you go to Sebenik is head inland to Krka National Park. The waterfalls there are pretty impressive, they say. Let's take a look at it. Oh, look at that. What a beautiful little coastal town. This is Primosten. Primosten is where wine lovers like to go. I guess I'm headed to Primosten. It's about 18 miles south of Sebenik, a prime spot to visit nearby wineries, including those that specialize in this special indigenous grape called the Babic grape, which produces a soft, fruity red wine. And of course, you can see the rolling hills and the olive groves. Their old town on its own little island connects to a newer town by a causeway. There's alleyways leading up to 15th century Church St. George, views of the Adriatic, pebbly beaches backed by pine trees. Beautiful. And I would say, really, no trip to Europe is complete without a trip to some type of castle-looking place. You gotta go. You gotta do it. This is Trogir, T-R-O-G-I-R, Trogir. It's an old walled town. It sits on a small island, sandwiched between the mainland, where the newer part of the city is, and the island of Siovo. They have beach resorts, bridges connecting all three of these areas. In the central square, beside the Romanesque St. Lawrence Cathedral, you'll see why this is a UNESCO heritage site. Beautiful. It's a jumble of medieval palaces and cobblestone lanes with squares where restaurants and bars squeeze into small courtyard gardens. Oh, it sounds amazing. If you wander along the waterfront, you'll hit this 15th century Camerlengo fortress. They say it's an atmospheric venue for summertime performances, classical pop concerts as well. I don't know, you guys. I say yes. Yes to Croatia, and I never thought I would, that would be a place I would be interested in going. But I think it looks beautiful. Was it Game of Thrones that was partially filmed in Croatia? I think it was. I've seen some beautiful pictures of that. Well, I hope you enjoyed Travel Tuesday. I know I enjoyed it. Here it is, Travel Tuesday. It's worth it for just a little mental health break as we go traveling at least once a week. Where should we go next time? You have any ideas? You can email me. It's kim@theafterparty.live or kimmcallister.com or kimmcallister@gmail.com or kgoinexile@gmail.com. All of these will work, and I believe I will get them all. So thank you for hanging out with me on Travel Tuesday. All right. Well, that's all I have for you today. I have to say, I'm ending a little bit early today, but I hope you have a really good rest of your afternoon. Again, a huge thank you to everyone who financially supports the show. Really couldn't do it without you. Find the PayPal address in the show description and join me tomorrow for the Nikki Maduro Show at 10, the Mark Thompson Show at 11, featuring John Rothman and others, and then back here for the After Party Live. I hope you have a really good rest of your day, and I will see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.